BlackScholarsPublishing.com.
That we should get our own. Once we have our own, we're respected for the fact that we can create our own. And that's equality right there.
Living. Start a record label, Miss Fish just did it. Nylon cover 5 minutes. We are too hot in the business.
Whoa.
About to make a movie independent. Woo!
Yo, welcome back to the Black Scholars Podcast. I am Leonard Andre Wilson Jr. I am your host. The Black Scholars Podcast is a community for black and brown educators. Whether you're in the classroom, the boardroom, you're a stakeholder, you're a parent, you're a scholar, potential school counselor or current school counselor, school psychologist, social worker, anything to do with anything related to kids learning, kids matriculating through the K-12 system, even at the collegiate level, we're going to grow this show. And this show, again, is the community. It's about the people. Please find me on Facebook. Go to Black Scholars Podcast. We have new merchandise there, the Black Scholars shirt, which is black and gold. It's a very dope shirt. I think you guys would appreciate that. Have some more shirts that are going to be coming up and some more products and whatnot that you guys will really enjoy. Also find me on Instagram at the Black Scholars Podcast. Again, Instagram, the Black Scholars Podcast. I enjoyed this show thoroughly. I lost my train of thought there. Sonia Scott is a dope educator, just a dope woman altogether, a dope human being, and I am blessed to have been able to meet her through social media. And she's young, she's wise beyond her age, and me and her, we just really want to focus in on just black educators and black education, and we dibble and dab between a few topics. You guys will thoroughly enjoy that. This is episode 5.
Me. Can you focus on me? Baby, can you focus on me? Hands in the soap, how the faucet's running and I keep looking at you. Stuck on your phone, now you're stuck in your zone. You don't ever cook, but I don't wanna give up. Baby, I just want you to get up.
Sonia, am I saying that right?
Yes, Sonia.
Okay, please introduce yourself to the listeners.
My name is Sonia B. Scott. I emphasize the B. And I teach 7th grade math. I'm walking into my 4th year as an educator.
Dope. So you said 7th grade math?
Yes. When I first started off, I was working as a Apollo tutor, and we just call those interventionists for sixth grade. However, I did mix and mingle with teaching with 7th and 8th grade as well, but most of my experience is 6th, 7th grade.
Dope. What? You're in New Orleans, correct?
Yes, I am in New Orleans, Louisiana.
What district is it in New Orleans?
Forgive me, but I just moved out here. I've been out here for a year.
Okay.
So I'm learning a lot about how we, you know, vote language in their education system. So there's majority charters in New Orleans. Okay. And so currently I'm going to be working in the first line charter in New Orleans.
Okay. And is this your first time working for a charter school?
Yes, this is my first time. I've substituted with KIPP back in Houston, but this is my first time working as a lead teacher in a charter school, yes, which is definitely different.
And in Houston, did you work for what is Houston's called? Houston School District?
Yes, I work for HISD.
Okay, okay. I'm trying to think, what famous charter school system is in Houston?
You have a few. You have KIPP, which is well known.
I think it's Kip. Kip started in Houston, right?
I think so, if I'm not mistaken. Yes.
Okay.
They're all over the place now.
And it was the guys who did the Doug Lamov, I think, who did the Teach Like a Champion. Isn't he the founder of Kip and everything?
I think he was also part of Teach for America. But I actually have his book on my bookshelf now.
Oh, the Teach Like a Champ?
Teach Like a Champ. Oh, okay. Teach for America really supports the book and they use it very closely when they train potential teachers.
Sure.
So it's definitely one of those books that a lot of schools have learned to adapt to and want their teachers to be very familiar with. But it's a pretty good book.
All right. So you're going to be going into year four. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And you're going to be doing math next year.
Of course.
Okay. And you came in through Teach for America. So what was that experience like, going through Teach for America?
Teach for America has been a great experience, because it definitely gives you a different perspective when we talk about education on a spectrum. So before I joined Teach for America, I had already had a couple of years under my sleeve with education. Now, Teach for America is another way for future teachers, potential teachers, to become a part of an organization, train, learn the ins and outs, and it's fun. Teach for America really hit a nerve for me, because I didn't understand the importance of race in education until I joined Teach for America, and I probably was okay, but I definitely had some very uncomfortable moments.
Going through the training through Teach for America?
Yes, okay. Going through the training, I had some very uncomfortable moments, because Teach for America is like, you go in, you have to, you're going to be going through training with all these, you know, these new teachers, for the most part, first year teachers, and there's majority of white people being that are coming in with Teach for America.
Right.
And so that puts you at a place like, dang, like, where do black folks at? You know, like,
right.
Where do black teachers at? And so it's a very few of you. And so you get a little uncomfortable, because it's like, for me, I grew up in diverse areas. So I'm okay with being everyone. You know, I'm pretty open to everybody. But when you're in a room full of nothing but white people, and it's like, we're about to get ready to go into these low income schools, you know, they're predominantly black. Do y'all even know what's expected? And so you get a little nervous, because, you know, these black kids, y'all going to be teaching these black kids, and it's going to be a different atmosphere. And so you kind of like, you get a little uncomfortable, and you get a little concerned, because you want to make sure, like, I want all of us to be in this for the right reason. And I can honestly say, like, people do come through Teach for America, and it's kind of complicated to determine whether the teachers are coming in because they want to actually stay in this, or are they coming in it, you know, are they coming in this for their own benefit?
Yeah, great point. Are you familiar with the New Teacher Project at all?
No, I heard of it before, but I'm not familiar with it.
I think they'd be considered a competitor for Teach for America. That's how I actually got into education. And I could totally relate to everything that you said, because, you know, there was few and far between of African-American or just minority educators in that program. And a majority of them were white. And to be honest with you, if I can remember correctly, I think we had two white attorneys who were trying to do a career transition over into education. They actually they both quit during the summer. Yep, they quit during the summer training. And then that left me a bit baffled. And even just conversations that we would have, like you said, we're going into low income schools, schools where, you know, 90% of the population is impoverished, or, you know, they qualify for poverty according to federal guidelines. And just the way that we would have those conversations where we're talking about black and brown kids, and it's like, can you actually relate to those kids that, you know, are you here for the right reason?
Yes, I agree. And that's definitely the biggest thing that we, you know, that is so important in these schools, because, you know, just a year of being in New Orleans, I know my students really, we had a lot of those, you know, black and white conversations. Yeah. And so for me, it's very important that we, you know, that we mention that in the midst of, like, you know, teaching social studies or science, art. I don't, you know, it doesn't even matter. But having that conversation is very important.
Definitely. So, so when you were in college, so what did you actually major in as an undergrad?
I actually majored in accounting. I was definitely sure that I was going to be an accountant after I graduated. But I actually took a year off during college. I attended Prairie View A&M when I took a year off, and I had the opportunity to, you know, to teach at HISD. So after I've completed that, I graduated, I already knew what I wanted to do, and I knew for a fact it wasn't accounting. So I went right back into education.
That's dope. My dad's actually an accountant, and at one point I thought I was going to follow in his shoes, but glad I didn't. So let me ask you this. Did you feel a calling to education? Did you have, like, was it, what was the program, or what were you doing before you got into being before you got into Teach for America? What you said, you were like an interventionist or something?
Yeah, so I was a math interventionist at HISD for about 2 years. I think when I left there, because I went back to school, and that's when I attended Texas Southern University. But when I went back to school, I already know, like, I took a year off. That's fine. Went back, and I already knew, like, I'm ready to get this, you know, get this degree. I already know what I want. And so when I graduated, I end up getting a job as a financial analyst with Wells Fargo. And it was fun. You know, the money's fun. It's amazing. But I wasn't happy. And so I wasn't happy because I felt like I was missing something. So I will always go back and think about, like, you know, I had so much fun teaching. I changed so many, you know, I built so many relationships with students. I've made some good long life friends that I worked with. Like, I miss it. Every day it was something new. It was exciting. There was always a challenge. Like, that was amazing for me. Like, that's my fuel right there. And so sitting in my cubicle at Wells Fargo I felt like, what am I really doing? Like, who am I helping right now? Besides the company, like, who am I really helping right now?
Right.
And I just felt like, you know, like, I wanted to follow my passion, and my passion was to work with kids. If it was about the money, I would have stayed where I was. And so maybe it was my calling. I know for a fact it was my passion, and it's what I wanted to do. So Teach for America accepted me. They, you know, New Orleans was where I wanted to go. They gave me my New Orleans, and that's where I'm at now.
Dope. We definitely have some commonalities. I actually used to work for Wells Fargo. Actually, before I quit, they actually offered me a promotion.
Yeah.
I was on the banking side in the back room, so like the data encoding and imaging and whatnot.
Okay.
And I had a conversation with my grandfather, and he was like, you know, I know you're doing well for yourself, but when are you going to, you know, get your degree? When are you going to take school seriously? So
yeah,
that's what moved me down to the South. Ended up moving down to Tennessee, went to Tennessee State University. I'm originally from Wisconsin, but it was a conversation with my grandfather, and looking around and like, do I want to do this for the rest of my life, or at least the majority of my life? And it's like, nah. And slowly but surely, I worked my way into education, and I'm glad that I did so. So
Well, I'm glad you did too.
Definitely, definitely. So, I'm trying to see, where do we want to go here? So did you always want to be a teacher, or was it the interventionist experience that made you decide that you wanted to work with kids long term?
I knew I wanted to be a teacher when I was really, really young. My sisters and I will probably, we'll always get some paper, chill, and then we'll play teacher and students in our rooms. And so I was always the teacher, and it was just fun. Like, kids asking questions, them answering it. And it's like, it's fun. Like, we had the perfect classroom in my bedroom. So it was like something I used to play with as a child. But I mean, as I got older and I started to understand like what it is that I wanted to do, at some point I really wanted to be an accountant. I wanted to, whatever involved accounting, I wanted to do it. Because I felt like I need to make a lot of money. I need to like make a lot of money. And so I had to, when I graduated, I had to figure out what's more important to me. You know, what would add more value to my life? And at that moment, I just knew like education would do that for me.
And you do actually have a bachelor's degree in accountancy, right?
Yes.
Have you thought about using it as a business that you start on the side, or even seasonally, especially like around income tax time and whatnot?
Well, I actually was going to, next year, I definitely am going to get back into doing taxes. So, I was preparing taxes before, excuse me. Okay. So I'm actually looking forward to getting back into it. So that way, that'll just be something else to do, because I actually enjoy doing taxes. It's fun. And it's a quick way to make some extra income, of like you just said. So that's probably it. I know I like tutoring, so I'm definitely getting back into the tutoring on the side with a few students that are actually about to get ready to go to high school.
Definitely. I am a firm believer in the art of side hustling as an educator, because, I mean, think about it. Like, you can actually make some really good money on the side, and you have favorable hours. You know, you get, mm-hmm. Considerate amount of breaks throughout the year. I don't, and this is just my personal rant here, but I don't like when educators complain about income. I do get that there are some states where it's just ridiculous, like Mississippi, Arkansas, like it's just super, super low. Like Arkansas, I think they were paying at one point, if you had a master's degree, like $26,000 or something like that. And it's like, what? You're paying $26,000 for a master's degree?
That is ridiculous.
Like, you want your teachers to be impoverished and tell kids that they should focus on school and education is important, yet you got a master's degree and you make $26,000 a year? Like, that's disrespectful. Like, seriously?
That is definitely disrespectful. That is ridiculous. And that is a slap in my face.
Exactly.
After I worked so hard to even get this master's?
Exactly. Oh, no. So I will say, for those particular states, yes, you guys need to go the political, civil, civic duty route of getting what you deserve. You definitely deserve to get paid more. But like, if you are in a decent state, a decent district, and you're making, however much that fits the cost of living for that city or environment that you're in, I think that you need to take advantage of the hours and the flexibility that being an educator provides. And I think you need to, get into a side hustle. So
I definitely agree. I mean, there's definitely some other, I do take a lot of different things into consideration when we talk about teacher salaries, because truth be told, like, I don't agree, like, the amount of work we put in, the time, it's definitely invested. Like, we're definitely beyond our 40 hours per week.
Oh yeah, definitely. I definitely 100% agree with you there. Like, let's make an argument that, every educator, regardless of where they're staying, of course, that's in consideration to cost of living. Because if you're teaching in New York or if you're teaching in Los Angeles, like, your cost of living is so high, right?
Yeah.
But I feel like all educators should make six figures with the amount of, well, let me say this, all effective educators should make six figures.
There you go.
Because effective. We are putting in the work. And those who aren't putting in the work, well, then they get paid whatever they get paid.
Whatever they get, agree. and that's well said, because again, like you say, use the word effective. It's very important.
Be effective.
Effective. If when I think about school sometimes on a business level, because that's exactly what it is.
It is.
And I think about the fact that, an effective teacher is going to bring you the most money.
Facts. Definitely. Definitely.
So,
and we're an asset for society. Like, we are the ones who are given the basic skills for the future doctors, nurses, accountants, you know, lawyers. Like,
providing the rigor that,
we set the foundation for them to be able to do what they need to do at the next level, which is, you know, college, grad school, professional school. So definitely, we might need to, we might need to hook up and do an episode on that in the future. So, no, I'm serious.
Like, I can go forever about that.
For real. Like, I'm serious about, like, the art of side hustling, what we should be paid. And, you know, going into it, because going into education, I knew specifically, like, okay, I know if I move to Memphis, Tennessee, which they used to call, quote unquote, teacher town, that I'm going to make a decent amount of money. It's the reason why I left Nashville, because Nashville was paying teachers like, starting teachers like $10,000 less. So I said, nope, I'm going to go to Memphis. Memphis is a lower cost of living. And I get to make more than what, you know, Nashville is. Because Nashville, have you been to Nashville before?
No, never been to Nashville.
Nashville is growing almost similar to Atlanta. And what I mean by that is that it's a lot of businesses there, a lot of millennials there, just a lot of people moving to Nashville. And it's, so it's expensive. Even just trying to get a hotel room in Nashville is like, you got to do it early because you're going to be paying some outrageous fees.
I had to make the executive decision on whether or not I wanted to stay in Texas or move to Louisiana, because Texas is probably one of the highest paying schools, if I'm not mistaken. And they're starting, you know, a lot of them are starting their teachers off at like 53.
Yeah.
And that's just coming in as a first year teacher.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, and out in New Orleans, I know the minimum that they have is like 35.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't know.
That's a big difference.
Yeah.
That's a
huge difference. And the cost of living is familiar. So I know one of my friends was like, are you sure you want to go out there?
Right.
I was like, girl, this is New Orleans. I want to have fun, experience their culture. We're gonna make it work.
Right.
But
they have a very rich culture. Yeah, definitely. Very rich culture in New Orleans. Definitely.
Oh, yes. You'll be surprised.
But yeah, you know, we're all intellectual. And so it's like, duh, you're smart. You know what the salary is going to be and you're pursuing this career. So you need to be able to plan, like, okay, how can I do some other things to generate income? How can I... You know,
to balance it out.
And a lot of educators that I know have multiple talents, like a lot of different talents. And it's like, why aren't you using that other talent to help generate some additional income? Like, you know, that's we'll save that for a future.
I definitely agree with that, because I did coach. Like, I coached my 3 years of teaching, and you get extra stipends for stuff like that. So it's honestly money out there for us.
Right.
It's just a matter of, like, you know, getting it.
Do you want to go get it? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because a lot of, I'm just speaking for my colleagues that I have worked with. They always complain about everything. They complain about, you know, I'm broke, I can't do this, I can't do that. And then they look at me and they're like, Mr. Wilson, how do you do all of this stuff? You podcasting, you got this job, you got this job on the side, you doing this. It's like, because I got to get it. Like, I'm sitting here and complain with y'all. Like, no, I have to go get it. Like, it's not even an option.
I mean, we know what we sign up for. And yeah, we definitely know what we sign up for. And it's more than just the money. Because, when you get into education, it's so much more than you just teaching somebody's child. It's so much more than that.
There are
so many aspects that plays into being an effective teacher. It's, you know, like, everybody can't teach. I mean, I can help you, you can help me, but everybody is not capable of teaching. And so it's, like I said, it's just so many aspects that comes into it, which is why I say, you know, when it comes to salary, what you put in is what you get out.
Agreed. We'll save that for a future episode, though. All right, so let's talk about Black educators. And you kind of mentioned it when you were describing your Teach for America experience. Where are we, like... We have this, like you said, stigma off air. We were, you know, going back and forth. You said there's a stigma between, you know, white teachers and Black students. Where are the Black educators at? Why aren't they present? Like, where are
they? Where
they
at? To this day, I'm still trying to figure it out. I just, the biggest thing that I feel is that a lot of us have our, it's like we have our minds made up, you know, and I'm about to be 25. And I know a lot of people that I went to school with, everybody has their mind made up. My sisters and brothers, they're all, a lot of them are in accounting. They're all still in business and corporate. And it's like, that's fun. They already had their minds made up. So I feel like the absence of Black teachers in the classroom is because there's so much more out there. Why would I want to, you know, why would I want to be an educator? And I understand, like, I totally understand that there's so much more out there. Then when you think about what the factors that plays into being a Black educator, we don't have a lot of Black educators already in the system. We don't.
Right.
And because there's so few of us, it's so hard to speak up for what we need because it's only a couple of us. In a school, there's probably 3 Black educators in one school. And at that point, it's like, we feel this way, but when it's time to communicate that message, how can we get it out there? And like I said, if I was really caught into accounting, I wouldn't, you know, and I wanted to make sure I had my wealth. I wanted to build my wealth. I would have never came into education. I wouldn't have come into education.
Yeah. And even if you think about, okay, if your skill set is being able to teach, being able to communicate, crowd control, instructional design, which is really like user design, there are so many different careers available outside of education where our skills easily can be transformed in that new environment.
Strengthen.
You know, for example, what are they called? Corporate trainers. So if you are a corporate trainer for a Fortune 500 company, they make 6 figures for most Fortune 500 companies, pretty much regardless of what state it's in. So it's like, oh, so the only difference is that, you know, my audience or my class is not 12-year-olds. Now I've got 30-year-olds. Okay. You know, I can teach 30-year-olds. So it's like, you know, that's just a change of environment. It's like, even if you felt called to teaching, and I think some people make that decision, I see a lot more educators kind of moving from, you know, K through 12, especially public, and moving over to the corporate side and making what they should make for the work that they're doing, honestly. So,
And that's another thing. I feel like some Black teachers do get there. Like, we have some teachers that do get into education, but then when I see, you know, when they start to get a taste of it, they start to realize, like, and, you know, this is fun. I can do it on the side, but I can't do this full time. Because truth be told, when you're working in low income schools, those students have the, you know, that's your behavior. That's a behavior issue right there.
That makes it hard to effectively teach.
It makes it very difficult to be an effective teacher. But then you also have, you know, like, younger teachers who feel like, some of them feel like, I don't have to deal with this. These kids are disrespectful. They don't want to learn, you know, this, that, and the other. And it's just something they realize that they don't want to do. And I understand that. I respect that. Again, education is not for everybody. I talk about this a lot. I talk about it to my friends. We need more Black educators. We need more Black men in education. Because women, definitely, we don't have a problem with going to teach kids. You know, we don't have a problem with having to deal with that. This is why we're here. We're here to deal with the things that, you know, other people may not want to deal with. And so, because I love strong Black women, because we gonna hold it down regardless. And so our presence in a school changes a lot. But when you have a Black man in a school, it changes so much because you have so many students who lack certain, you know, certain things, like a 2-parent household, a parent household. You know, a lot of them are living with grandparents. Right. Some of them are living with an aunt or an uncle. Truth be told, some of them are homeless. Some of them are living out of cars. Like, this is the reality of a lot of our students. Some of them lack fathers. And so having those Black males in the school, there's a mentor, there's a father figure, there's a role model, there's a man's perspective, you know, that's a man's perspective. Like, It really is very effective when you have more Blacks, especially more Black men in the school. And I would love to see a wave of Black men dive into education. Like, I'm waiting for that day to happen.
I do know in New York, for example, I know New York has a program where they are trying to pretty much coordinate with all of the different universities there and trying to, find and pick, select potential teachers, specifically African-American males who would like to be teachers. And I'm not sure how well that, program is going. I have to do some research on that, but I don't see all states like in Tennessee. I read something recently where they have like a diversity initiative, but I don't know if that necessarily means they're just going after more Black and brown teachers or if they're specifically going after male teachers. Yeah. And I always figure, and this is me being selfish, I don't mind sharing this with you, but this is what I figured. I'm in education. I've been in education. I've made this my career. I feel like I should be able to get my doctor's degree for free. I'm just saying. I should be able to get my doctor's degree for free.
Look,
it's less than 2% of all African Americans are
I'm doing some public work. What I'm doing is benefiting the community. Look,
you're underpaying me already, right? You're underpaying me already.
Let's fill the gaps.
I'm highly effective. Let me get my doctorate degree. Go ahead and pay for it.
Because I can be a teacher for 20 years, and I promise you, I probably wouldn't ever see $100,000 in my pocket. At least not all at once. So do me a favor. Knock off some student loans. Yeah. Go ahead. Knock them off.
And then let me get this doctorate degree. And we settled, right? We settled. We good.
We good, right? Because the little 5-year of, like the 120 payments of paying off my loan getting some of it knocked off. That don't do nothing. I need more than that.
That's true. And you know what? You got to keep up with your records because I have a few colleagues who have done that. Obviously, they're older because they've, that's a long time.
Yeah.
I think they were on like the 10-year thing, right?
I think it starts off at a certain amount and then it goes to 10 years.
Yeah, but I have a colleague who did that, and she was like, they're not doing it. They're saying something and something, and I'm like, huh? I'm like, I hope you kept your receipts for 10 years, because I would be, that's worth a plane ticket. Like, I'm going to be there knocking on, whomever's door.
I haven't gotten into that, but I do have, it was a conversation a couple of coworkers and I had discussed yesterday, and it did come up, so I guess I would have to look into that too, because I definitely was convinced to get a part of that program, but I'll definitely have to look into it myself.
Yeah, I mean, I think the program is valid, but I just would be, I'm a little worrisome after she said that. I'm like, so you've been paying on time for 10 years.
For this long,
and they still are giving you pushback like they don't want to do it. Go ahead and just waive that. Just go ahead.
Need to talk to the manager.
Definitely. But yeah, I do need them to go ahead and just pay for that doctorate degree, as I am an African-American male and highly underrepresented in my field. Thank you to whoever university is listening to this. It don't even matter. Yes. I don't even care where the degree come from. As long as I can say Dr. Wilson at the end of it.
I don't care. Just give me the free money to be more productive in this world. Just give me some free money.
Interesting. Let me ask you this, since we were talking about higher education. Going through the Teach for America program, did that allow you to earn your master's degree in education and teaching?
So you commit 2 years in Teach for America. In the first year, you're a first-year teacher, and you're going through certification. So I went through TNTP. That's the certification program I went through.
Okay.
That's the first year. Now, the second year, you get the opportunity to go through Johns Hopkins online and get your master's degree. And being in Teach for America, that you're already going into the program with some credit hours. Mm-hmm. However, it was something I wanted to do, but I want to get my master's in education leadership. So they didn't have that available. And so
I bet they didn't.
See, it's just stopping my greatness.
Exactly. It's a system.
So I had to abort mission, yeah. And I'm definitely looking into grad schools here in New Orleans.
Cool. You gotta keep me updated on that.
I definitely will.
Yeah, I've got two masters. One is in education, but I took a year's worth of doctorate classes.
Excuse me, you missed the two degree.
Well, I need the doctorate though. So I did a year at the University of Memphis in their doctorate uh-huh. program in instructional design and technology, right? I stopped when my son was being born. I stopped because I'm like, oh, those are bills. So let me just, because I was paying for the thing myself. Yeah, let me just chill out for a second. And I know I want to go back. I know I want to finish, but I don't want to do it in instructional design and technology anymore. Mm. I do want to go ahead and do leadership. I need my admin's license. I need that.
Yes. We definitely need you in an administrative position. We need you to go ahead and tackle that because it's not too many of us up there either.
No. So that's a great segue. So you mentioned, and if you don't want to talk about it, we don't have to, but you did mention that there were two incidents that you went through with you speaking about speaking out about certain issues that were going on in your school, and you got in some trouble or almost got in trouble.
Well, I mean, I'm young, so I'm not that that's an excuse, but I'm very straightforward, and I'm definitely learning to pay attention to the way I take care of certain situations, especially in education. And so I came into education and the incident was pertaining to my students. And it was normally around the end of the year, you're about to get ready to take those end of year tests. It's crunch time now. And so the issue was that one of the admin wanted me to take kids out of their science class to teach them math because they needed that intervention. And the issue for me was that I don't mind taking the students out, to have some math intervention. I want that. I've been asking for that. Let's do it. But you're asking me to take it during another core content that only receives, half of what I'm receiving to teach my kids. I don't think that's fair. And so the bigger issue for me was like, well, are we communicating this to the parents? Are the parents aware that their student is no longer about to receive science class? I just want to make sure that everyone's on one page before we start making these decisions. And true enough, I'm a teacher. This is my first year at this school. I feel like this was a conversation that needed to be had because we cannot make decisions based on a test. Because this test is only right now. What about 3 years from now when they have that science question that's eighth grade, seventh grade level, and they're incapable of answering it because you took them out of science class to focus on some more math? Why not do that during recess or elective? Let's find some other, alternatives before we start taking kids out of classes that they absolutely need.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And that was me being rebellious, if you want to call it that. But I felt like I was being a concerned teacher. I feel like I was a damn concerned teacher. And if I was a parent, I would have been a concerned parent too. Because if my child tell me, oh, well, I'm not doing science no more, it's not that important. Tests come, because for some students, they feel like if I'm being taken out of science, it may not be important. Right. So when it's time to take the test, I'm just going to mark anything because we didn't even have science the last two, three weeks before the test. So who cares? Right. And that is the wrong idea to send to students. And that's the exact idea. That's the message we're sending to kids. That definitely is. And I expressed that. I definitely let them know. And I had to suffer a little heat from it, but it got on track and, we found ways around it and we were good with the situation. However, I felt the need to step up and say that.
And there were other Black educators who felt the same thing around you?
Of course. I'm really big on situations, not just in my professional life, but in my personal life too. So if there's a situation that happens with me and I'm not sure if where my mistake is or, what's what, I'm going to ask for another person's opinion. How, like, what is another way that I could have handled that? You know, what is another way that I could have said that? And so a lot of the, my teacher, you know, my coworkers are older than I am. They've been in education longer than I have. And so when I bring them the situation, it's like, well, no, Sonya, you're right. You know, you're right. You know, because I wouldn't want them to take my child out of science. If my child need extra assistance, call me, let me know. Send home some work, tutorials after school. What about tutorials before school? You know, like I had lunch tutorials. Me and my kids get your lunch, come upstairs, we can listen to music, and we can have some fun learning math outside of what a full class. And my kids took advantage of it. So there are ways. We just have to make time for them.
Agreed. So have there been other situations where you felt like your colleagues felt like you felt, but you were the only one that actually spoke out?
The science teacher that they wanted me to pull the students out of, I had spoke with her and I asked, I said, hey, you know, how do you feel about it? She was like, well, I mean, we don't have a choice. And I was like, says who?
That's the wrong mindset.
Says who? I was like, well, you ain't got a choice, but I definitely have a choice. And so when she said that, honestly, my heart dropped because I was like, not to step on toes, but we don't need that kind of mentality in the classroom, and especially not with my Black kids. Not with my Black kids. You're not about to do that. You are not about to minimize what anybody can do because higher authority said it.
I would almost argue that's like a fixed mindset, which a lot of our kids who look like us have that fixed mindset. Like,
but how many ask me if the teacher was Black.
Oh, I already know. I already know. So,
ask me if she was Black. Of course, because when she said that, honestly, I felt some kind of way about it.
As you should.
And, you know, because I felt like, first and foremost, I'm not the science teacher.
Right.
She's not pulling, nobody's pulling the kids out of my math class because I ask questions. Mm-hmm. But they're pulling the kids out of your science class. You only get 50 minutes compared to me receiving my 100.
Right.
You need every minute that you can get.
Right.
So why are you not fighting? Because you feel so strongly about your kids learning this, yet you so quick to just not have that say, not have that choice, like to not speak your truth as a teacher.
You've got to fight me if you're trying to steal my instructional time.
You really do. You like, really, really do. You have to, because you hired me as a teacher, so you better damn believe that you're going to get it.
Which is the reason why I don't really write kids up. I think I maybe had two, three referrals all school year long. And the reason why is because it doesn't benefit or behoove me or my students if little Johnny is
in. I could come over there and give you a big hug right now.
For real. I don't want them in the audience. I mean, I don't want them in the assistant principal's office. I don't want them in school suspension. Mm-hmm. I want them here in this class learning, because that's what's going to make the ultimate difference. So, yeah, I love everybody that works at my school for the most part, especially the office staff. But when they call and they keep, you know, they get on the buzzer and they keep interrupting, it's such and such here and da 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 this and this. I'm like, hey, just cannot wait for later, because we're in the middle of a really good lesson right now. And
we really are.
The kids are actively engaged and, you know.
Yes. And you know how hard it is to get every 100%.
To get every kid. Like, I got kids yelling answers at me. Like, dude.
Yes. That is what I live for.
Exactly. That makes it all
worthwhile. You come in here talking about they about to go home. Nah, they're going to have to go home at 3:00.
Right. Right. We got 15 you know, minutes of class left. They can wait.
I definitely agree with you. Writing students up was not in my, that is not my forte. Now, the only time I had to write students up is when words that you don't use with your parents.
Yeah. Worst case scenario, it's like, you know, it's gotten too far. It's like, okay, now you got to go.
Now you got to go. Because now you playing with me. And that's, right. And now you got to go. So right. I'm a big communicator when it comes to my classroom. If you walk in my classroom, you know you ain't feeling it, let me know ahead of time. Exactly. Because when it's time to do the work and you don't, you know, you giving me all this attitude, mm-hmm. I didn't do nothing to you. You just walked in my classroom. Like, we could kill all of that just through communication. And so you would see how effective it is when you open the floor for your students to communicate. And so, like, as you know, just going back to the whole writing kids up, one of my students, he was definitely a troublemaker, but he was, you know, I felt like he was really trying. And they were trying to write him up because he was just, you know, doing this disruptive, da da da. And I'm just like, writing him up is not going to teach him anything. Because no. What he going to sit at home and do nothing. So where's the benefit? Where does that benefit anybody? If he's doing something that he don't need to do, give him detention. Baby, make him go to detention. Make him come, you know, make him come back up here and make up the work that he lost by interrupting your classroom. Like, there are other ways to, you know, to give out these, you know, these, I don't want to say punishments, but to give out these consequences. There are other ways around them. If my students are being loud, disruptive in class, that's fine. Because guess what? If y'all want to be loud and disruptive, clearly y'all know what y'all talking about. Especially if I'm teaching.
Right.
Because I'm going to give y'all the floor.
Oh, yeah, I'll stop.
Baby, when y'all ready, let me know.
Yeah.
Let me know. When y'all are ready to learn, let me know.
I'll go check my emails.
Exactly. And that's why I said there are so many other ways. But I feel like when you don't have, you know, the advantage of being a Black teacher is that students are going to relate and you are going to relate to your students.
Definitely.
We're already aware of our culture. The only difference is between my students specifically is y'all are from New Orleans, Louisiana. Majority of y'all are from out here, and I'm just from a different state. But I can almost guarantee you our experience have been similar. Definitely. And so that's the advantage. However, when you have teachers of some other, you know, another ethnicity, I'm sorry, excuse me, and it's different for them because they're coming with this stereotype. They're coming with their own idea and they're not, you know, they're open, but they're still kind of closed-minded because for them it's like, I'm the teacher, you're the students, I'm about to teach and that's what it is. I wish it was so easy for us to just walk in a classroom, teach, kids get it, they answer questions and everybody goes home. That's a perfect world. But of course, that's not the life we're living in.
Not at all.
So, like I said, it's just a matter of having that grit, having that understanding, being open, you know, and being willing to figure out what are some other ways. Because if I know that the benefits of a child going home and not learning nothing versus being at school and just having to do some extra work, I'm gonna do whatever requires a child to do the extra work. Because I'm all in for extra work.
Definitely. So let me ask you this, as a Black educator, a Black scholar, being academically astute and melanated at the same time, what do you think we can do to change the status quo for Black educators? How can we get more Black and brown teachers in the classroom? How can we keep them in the classroom? How can we improve the profession?
I mean, it's a very hard question because trying to get people on board to get in education is already a battle in itself. It's one of those situations where you have to commit, you know, you have to commit a lot. And I feel like growing up for so many of us, we've been in classrooms where our friends are cursing a teacher out, disrespecting the teacher, and they're acting in a way that if I was a teacher, I'm not about to deal with that. And so we all have our own perception growing up in these classrooms as what a teacher is. And so I understand, like, if some of my friends didn't want to be a teacher, because kids give teachers hell.
Sometimes parents do too, or administrators, or yeah.
Man, look,
we catch it from everywhere.
We do. Yeah. You really do, and it's one of those things where, because I'm gonna always be honest and upfront with anybody that decides to go in education, because I've had a couple of friends that's come to me about Teach for America or, you know, certification programs or even get into education. Like, how do I feel about it? And I tell everybody, education is not for the weak.
Nope.
It's not for the weak.
Nope.
It's not. It's not for, you know, it's not for people who think that you're going to go in the classroom, you're going to be cool with the kids and
this is what it is.
No, because I was cool with my kids. You know, we were cool. I had that one student that cursed me out. almost every day.
Wow.
Look, you can, everybody can't like you. Everybody cannot like you. Yeah. And so, like I said, if you, you know, you also have to have patience. And a lot of people admit that they don't have the patience. And so, like I said, if we want to get more of us involved, we just have to be, you know, we have to be bold about it. We have to be bold. We have to really be wanting to do this. This has to be a want. And, you know, I wish that more Blacks were involved. However, I wouldn't want a Black person to come in and, half-ass my kids and then walk out.
Right.
If you're not in it for it, if you're not in it for them, just get out. Yeah. Because they don't need any more half-ass teachers.
They've had enough.
Half-ass Black teachers. Because we do have we have teachers that really don't put in the efforts. They do a couple of things. And those are typically the teachers that lack classroom management. Kids run over them and they feel like the kids are being this and the kids are being that. And those will be the teachers that don't have the relationship with the students.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like I said, we could, I hope, and I mean, for listeners, if it's something that you thought about and it's something you think that you may be great at, I would say try it out. Start small though. Tutor a couple of kids. You know, like work with a couple of kids, volunteer.
Yeah. Even even during state testing, like we look for like proctors and stuff. Like,
definitely. Like just come get in, be in the atmosphere for a second. See if that's something that you want to do. And another thing, you don't have to be a teacher to be involved in education.
Nope. You can be a school counselor, guidance counselor, school psychologist, therapist, you can be, nurse.
Look, there's so many aspects to it. Like, you can be an HR, yep. And you can still know it, and you can still help out where you can. Like I said, it's just a matter of people willingness and wanting to actually do it.
Agreed. 100% agreed. Now, let me ask you this. Do you, and I know you're going to your fourth year, but do you consider yourself a great teacher?
You know, I feel like I am in the early stages of being a great teacher.
Okay.
I feel like I'm in the early stages of being a great teacher. And I say that because after, you know, I read, now don't tell on me, but I read some of the Teach for a Champion book. I was supposed to read the whole thing a long time ago, but I didn't. But I read some pieces of it, and I'm actually currently reading While All the Black Kids Sitting in the Cafeteria, Sitting Together in the Cafeteria by Beverly Tatum. And as I go through like certain situations and going through these different schools and charter schools, I can honestly say the one thing that I do well is build those relationships with my teachers. And it's one of the biggest things that they always teach in these PDs. In all of our professional development, they always talk about building relationships. And I feel like the only way to build a great relationship or to be as great as you can be is by building those relationships with your students. It's literally the foundation of being a great teacher, because I cannot be a great teacher and my students, you know, don't know me outside of me being a teacher. Like, you, sometimes you have to be yourself in the classroom. You have to be yourself in the classroom. And so I do feel like with these 3-4 years going into education, like, I've mastered the relationship. I've mastered the classroom management. Now I do want to master my effectiveness. And I say that because I'm still trying to figure out the most effective way to reach kids on different levels in one classroom.
So you know, do you mean like individualized learning along with like differentiation?
Perfect. Individualized learning. And so, you know, you have students that, like, I taught seventh grade, and to be clear, like, I had some students who were on fourth grade levels. I had some students that were on fifth grade levels, and I've had some students that were, you know, lower than that.
I've been there.
And so you have to figure out what is the strategy that I could use in order to, you know, in order to reach all levels. And that's where I talk of, you know, and that's where I've kind of learned that I can either teach, you know, rigor and break it down, or I can start small and start challenging my students, with upping the rigor. And so that's why I say, like, I'm in the beginning, early stages of being a great teacher. I'm definitely at the great teacher, but I'm at the beginner stages because I'm so early in the career. I'm in my career. There's so much I still need to learn. There's so much I'm still looking forward to learning. And so I'm getting there. I'm on a road.
Of course. Differentiation, I think, across states, across schools, school systems, districts, charter, public, private, differentiation should be the number one, or individualized learning should be the number one PD that every single educator, especially us, gets, because a lot of our kids are, diagnosed or undiagnosed with ADHD, and they need all types of
accommodation
to keep them actively engaged. You mentioned kids with behavior problems. You got kids who are coming to school and they're hungry. So there's a lot of different things that we don't know when we first meet a kid that we need to find out in order to be able to individualize the learning. So,
and it also affects their ability to grasp new information.
Of course.
And which is why I say, like, that all ties down to, like, building those relationships with students. You know, like, a student is not going to be comfortable with telling a teacher something that's so personal when they don't even have a solid relationship.
Exactly.
And so, that's why I say, like, it's just one of those things. Just, you have to really kind of like just learn and walk your way into it.
Now, you said you were reading, what book was that? Can you hold that up for me again?
Why Are All the Black Kids Sitting Together in the Cafeteria?
Okay.
By Beverly Tatum. Mm-hmm.
Would you recommend that to listeners?
I definitely would. I just started reading it. I ordered it off of Amazon. I just started reading it. And I'm trying to get better with understanding race and education, because that's exactly what it's about: understanding race and education, and how uncomfortable and how distant we are from having those conversations in class. I mean, in the school. I honestly wish we had PDs that focused specifically on race. Because I don't ever recall getting into a PD and we talking about, so black, white teachers and their effectiveness of,
Never.
Like, I've never been in one of those kind of PDs and I could really use it,
I'm going into year 9, I think. And I've never, ever. And I've been, out of town for conferences and been on different committees with the state. I have never, ever heard. The closest thing to it is when we talk about issues of poverty. And that's when we...
That's it.
Yeah.
We talk about the obvious.
Right. Surface level.
We talk about the things that are on the surface. Like, we know Dante doesn't have a father at home. And, we know that, so-and-so stays with their grandparents. Like, those are the obvious things. Let's get to the nitty-gritty. Things that are, the things that aren't so visible. I would love to have one of those conversations in the school. I know Beverly talks about a lot how race with language is. I know a lot of my teacher friends that are of a different background say, they always refer to students as, they use certain language that I just be like, just say what it is. The kids are black. You ain't got to say the African-American kid. Like, just say black. Say the black kids. Cut to the point. We know.
Kids of African descent.
The people of color. It's a professional way of saying it, but go ahead and talk about
just
what
say
it is.
Because we just gonna say white kids, the white kid.
Exactly. Now, don't get me wrong. Let me take that back, because all people of color are not only black.
Right.
But when we are specifically talking about black kids, that's what is predominantly in
schools. You know who we're talking about.
Right. Let's be specific, And so that's for me, and that's important to me, because I can honestly give Teach for America their props. When we went through that month of training and not getting paid. When we went through
You guys didn't get a stipend? We got a stipend for the new teacher project. They gave us some money.
Teach for America does not pay for that summer training. However, I'm not sure if they have any other you know, things, any other thing to reap from it. But no, we didn't get paid.
That's not right. Because you guys do student teaching during that time, right?
Exactly. Yeah. But I think what it is, because we don't get paid, is because it is student teaching.
Right.
And, you know, Teach for America, you come in and you assume that people that are coming to Teach for America, this is their first year. So I'm going to have to spit that to them, because if I'm coming in with some experience already, right, pay me. Now, yeah, they can get their teacher experience, but I already have mine, so pay me.
Yeah, we got a stipend. It wasn't a significant stipend, but I was glad to get it.
It pays for something.
I needed it.
It paid for something.
Exactly.
I'm just doing my time, waiting on my release date. Hello? Why are you so up? If this is an emergency, hang up, call 911. I don't do nothing uppish until after 11:30.
I don't want to be here. This is summer school. I see some of the same kids that didn't do nothing last semester. This ain't summer school, this bummer school. Anytime a teacher got to work extra in the summertime when they supposed to be on vacation, it's a bummer. They want me to turn in a new lesson plan every week. They still got to master the old material. What was I thinking? This has got to be the who's who of all the bad kids at this school. Why have my kids in here? I ain't got caught up on none of the movies I want to watch. This ain't summer school. This a lot of school. It's a lot of extra stuff I got to do for a little bit more money.
My whole summer break is slowly slipping away.
So, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to ask. So we're at the recommendation section. So besides that book, is there anything else that you recommend that you've been reading or listening to or watching for other Black educators out there?
I would definitely say get into some of, and I wrote them down, Beverly Tatum, Goodwin Woodson, and Michelle Alexander as well. They all have books that are predominantly about race.
Okay.
And education, like the miseducation of the Negro, like there
Carter
are
G. Woodson. Yes.
Yes. Yes. So there are some books that focuses on education. If you're not a teacher, but you want to know more about what teachers may have to consider, think about, and just hear, listen to, and have to work through, grab a book that focuses on race and education, because, you know, my biggest thing is that the issue is not always, for me, the issue has never been my students. They're not the issue.
Right.
It's race and education that becomes the backbone of the issue. And so that's, you know, that's my biggest recommendation. I would definitely say look into those authors and, you know, hop on the train. Help us out.
Please. Is there a quote that you would like to...
In honor of today's topic, James Baldwin said the power of the white world is threatened whenever a Black man refuses to accept the white world's definitions.
Mm.
Had to snap to that one when I read it, because I was when I read that quote, I was like, oh, this is nice. Cause yeah. you're making some noise. Cause I mean, sorry, but Beverly Tatum also talks about in her book how people that were against what, you know, the norm, what whites felt like the norm was, anybody that was against it were considered troublemakers. And if you were labeled a troublemaker, because you were, you know, you were rebellious and defiant against the rules that were already set in stone.
The status quo. Which is holding everyone back.
Which is holding everyone back, and even in education.
Even in education. But, you know, looking long term, you know, we got a few that have risen to the top, thankfully. And there are a lot of African American millionaires in this country, I will admit that. But usually they had to go against the traditional route in order to get to that.
I like to talk like my kids. They like to go against the grain.
Exactly.
they go against the grain.
Marching to the beat of their own drum. Because, exactly. You know, I hate to just list the entertainers, but we know all of the entertainers who are doing really well for themselves. But most of the African-American millionaires or well-to-do, they went through entrepreneurship. They're not working for anybody. Or if they are working for somebody, they might have started out working for somebody, but they had a side hustle. And I feel like that side hustle, you know, or maybe it could be investments with real estate. I know investments are a big part of African Americans being millionaires too.
So. Well, I'm definitely waiting for a couple of celebrities to all get together and and open up a couple of schools around the world that focuses and provides the necessary resources. And,
Shout out to Diddy. Diddy did open a school in Harlem, and I think he's going to be opening another campus pretty soon. And
awesome.
He's partnered with Dr. Stephen Perry. If you ever watched the CNN Black in Americas, I don't know if you've ever seen those. They're kind of old now. They need to continue to do them. But he was a principal. He's actually running everything for Diddy's school.
Okay. I would definitely love to see and hear more of, more celebrities doing it. I don't care if they got to take a picture and put it on social. I want to see it.
Exactly.
I want to see it. We talk about education so much, with celebrities. It's important. Help us out. Donate, open up. I want them to open up a school. Open up some schools, please.
Please.
And stay involved in it. Don't just open it. Because I feel like some people open up a school and they allow other people to run it. No, if I open up a school, I'm going to have hands on what's going on.
And speaking of money, because again, this is going to be a forever rant with me. Teachers can make money. You probably can't get it from being a teacher, but with your intelligence, your creativity, the time that you have, if you're willing to, be disciplined and put in the work, that you can make it. So here is a suggestion. I'm going to show you this book. This is the Millionaire Teacher. I don't know how well you can see this, but it's called The Millionaire Teacher, and it's by Andrew Halem. The 9 Rules of Wealth You Should Have Learned in School. And pretty much he talks about investing. It's how he became a millionaire. And he still teaches, to this day. He still teaches.
I think he's like I've heard of his book, too.
Yeah, I think he's like a band director or something. And there's also another book that I read years ago. It was a really thin book off of Amazon. I can't remember the name of it.
He said a really, really thin book.
It was super thin.
That minimized a lot of books.
But the information was so great that I'm mad that I let another teacher borrow it. And this was at an old school. So I don't even know this teacher's number anymore. So I'm like, where is that book? When will I ever run into him? But basically, it was an educator who did real estate investments on the side and during the summertime and everything. And he's a walking millionaire. So he was explaining when he goes into a parent teacher conference or whatnot, and he works in a very bougie, well-to-do, wealthy school district and neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And so the parents have this certain air about them that they're better than all of the educators. And he's he doesn't let them just say whatever they want to say. And he doesn't, because he's independently wealthy. He's good.
Yeah, so he got his own thing on the side.
Yeah, you're not going to talk crazy to me. I'm making some real money out here just like you are. So,
because they only see a teacher being a teacher, you're a teacher.
Exactly.
You ain't doing nothing. Oh, that's surprisingly.
Right. We could do a whole episode on that. Yeah.
Excuse me and my 5 other businesses on the side.
Exactly. So yeah, I do. This has been great. We definitely need to chop it up again. Definitely want you to be back on the show, but do you have any last?
This is fun. I really do appreciate being on here. I'm curious to know what my voice sounds like.
You should be good. You got the headphones. You should be good.
But no, I really do appreciate the opportunity to really speak about this. I would love to speak a lot more, because I feel like there's, we don't hear enough from the teachers themselves. I feel like we're so silenced and so boxed.
Yep.
So I would love, this is amazing. Need to have an inner outer circle for teachers.
definitely. And my plan is, not immediately, but in the near future, I definitely want a bigger community as a part of it as I'm growing the show. And also, I'm planning on doing some episodes where it's not just me and one other educator, but it'll be me and 4 other ones.
So I think
we all tackle one topic or subject. I think that'd be pretty dope. So I'm working on
that. I do agree. And I thank you again. Thank you, listeners, for, just listening out. I hope everything that we discussed was, it was eye-opening, and, whatever you feel. If you have kids, I will highly suggest to be active in their lives. Don't just check report cards and progress reports. communicate with the teachers, because I can honestly tell you there are teachers like myself that really appreciate parents that are more than involved with just, you know, answering phones when a child is, you know, misbehaving. Like, you know, we need that. Like I tell my kids, there's a three-way party when it comes to your education. That's you, that's me, and that's your parents. And so if you're not doing the work, that leaves more work for myself and your parents. And the education, it isn't for us. Right. So again, like, you know, I highly suggest that everyone just be active in your kids' lives.
Please.
Well, in their academic life.
Absolutely.
What can I say? Mamba out.
Thank you for listening to the Black Scholars Podcast. For more information, sometimes go to blackscholarspublishing.com.
You just gotta
go.
You will never know what you could ever be. If you never try, you will never see. Stayed in Africa, we ain't never leave. So one no slaves in our history. One no slave ships, one no misery.